You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Amanda Bierce. I think it might sound a little bit like I'm saying Pierce, like I'm piercing my ears, but it's Bierce with a B, like bravo, Amanda Bierce. We drive right into Amanda's decision to leave behind a safe corporate IT job that she says was draining the life out of her and instead pursue her personal passion as a health and wellness coach. Now, those two things are not a lot alike. So you can imagine that I have questions about how this played out. Along the way, we also talk about the challenges of breaking free from an employee mindset, why authenticity matters, and how Sunday scaries can be a big sign of impending change. And of course, there are a few fun detours into childhood jobs at Dairy Queen, chasing self-care as a parent, and the unexpected intersection of podcasts about true crime and self-help in Amanda's life. Alrighty, it's time. You're going to love it. Amanda Bierce, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am ready, and I'm so happy to be here.
That is great. All right, so I start all of my interviews and all my conversations with the same beginner question, which is, what part of the world do you call home these days?
Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, I love it. Last time I was in Albuquerque was during lockdown.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. It was, yes, it was a summer road trip with the family because everything was closed and we did this big trip. It was great. I need to go back when everything is like open and not, you know, lockdown.
A lot of the best things are outside anyway, so that helps in Albuquerque.
Same. I'm in Florida, very similar. So much of our stuff is outside, and also we build everything inside out, probably similar to Albuquerque. We have a lot of outdoor hallways. So, you know, made it a little easier in that one period of life.
Yes.
So, very good. In a second, we're going to talk about the official interview, which is not about weather and hallways. but I want to ask one more warm-up question, which is, can you share with us, with me and the audience, something you do to take care of yourself that you or somebody else might consider self-care?
Yes, absolutely. This is my favorite topic. One thing that I do that's a big part of my self-care routine is prioritizing time alone. It's something that I need that my family does not. So they could go attached to my hip all day, every day, but that is not something that works for me. So I have to make sure to block off time where I can just be alone with my own thoughts without other people's sounds and, you know, anybody poking me, asking me questions. And that is something that is crucial to my well-being.
Very good. Do you have little people in your family?
Not so little anymore, 10 and 13.
Okay.
But they to play games and ask questions and tell stories and all of the things.
Yeah. No, I should have actually used the word young people, but yeah, there is, you know, small humans are very high touch and high contact for a long time.
Yes.
A long time. It can be overwhelming. So the topic of the day, not young humans actually, but what we're going to talk about is how you decided to leave what you call a safe, in quotation marks, safe corporate job that you describe as draining the life out of you. Are you ready to talk about that today?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. So let's start with this. Can you tell us a little bit about what the job was? You don't have to give us like private details or throw anybody under the bus, but tell us a little bit about what the job or the career was.
So the job was IT. I was kind of a middleman between clients and technical resources, kind of speaking both of the languages. I was in a position that was very reactive. So we were monitoring other people's networks. If there were issues, it was, you know, I was on the phone. I was constantly had to be watching my email, watching my phone calls in case if something went down. I had to respond so quickly for all of the things because everybody's network is what keeps their business up and making money. So we know that that's very important.
Yeah. All right. So very good. So IT, real-time support, working for clients. When the clients say jump, you say how high.
And exactly.
So how long had you been in this career, this sort of field?
I had been in that sort of field about 8 years.
Pretty long time.
Yes.
Pretty long time. And so, how did you find your way to that job? Was this something that you studied in school? Was it something that you intentionally mapped out that you either fell in love with at some point, or you read a brochure, or you saw a sign on a wall that said, come do this? Like, how did you find your way to that?
I always say that I think, back in the day when there used to be physical catalogs, that I must have just been like flipping through it. And I was like, oh, I'll do that. Because I have no idea why I decided to work in IT. I think I was not sure what I wanted to do and just figured I had to do something and went to school in IT. Now that I'm a more self-aware human being, I think I would have realized right away that it was not the choice for me. But, 18,
Yes.
19-year-old me was chugging along, thinking this was what we had to do.
You know, that's a very valid description of the process we go through. So, like some people, so I've got four kids, two stepkids, and two kids, and the youngest is a high school senior going to college next year. So, it is, and then I had my own experience, right? Some people know from when they are little tiny munchkins what they want to do. Be an artist, they want to be a fashion model, they want to be a surgeon, they want to go to Mars, you know, they know, right?
I've always been envious of that.
Right? Yes. And other people don't know. And then you do, like, not even, so now it's online, but it's still the same kind of thing. You hit a point where they're like, what are you going to do while you're here? What are you going to study? What job are you training for? And so there definitely is the potential to select something that is a choice that, you know, you don't know enough about to make a good choice. And I think that we put a lot of pressure. This is a situation I cannot solve for the world. So I'm merely, this is a terrible thing to do, point out a problem with no solutions. But I think we put a lot of pressure on people to make what feels like a permanent decision at that point, which doesn't feel good. And then I think if you fast forward 10 or 15 years, there's many, many people that are like, oh, wow. Would have done that differently.
Exactly. How did I get here? What made me choose that?
Absolutely. And some of those are more dramatic than others.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, when one of my kids was little, she did this thing really little. Teacher did a thing where she made a prediction for what all the kids in her graduating preschool group would be when they grew up. It was adorable. It was absolutely adorable. I remember nobody's except for my own kids, of course. But it was super hilarious. What if anything, did you think you were going to be? If I had run into you when you were like 8, 9, 10 and said, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? What would you have said?
Probably something like a firefighter or
There
something like that.
you
Ta
go.
straight up tomboy. That was my way of thinking, which might have been a better fit. Not real great at sitting still behind a desk. So why I thought that a job where I could had to sit still behind a desk every day was it for me. Again, questionable.
All right. So, and was security and safety like a driver in choosing like a first job out of school? Like, was it appealing? Did it seem like a thing that like this is a stable job? It's respected.
Yes, I kind of vaguely remember, no offense, mom, a little nudge from my mom saying, these people at my work are making a lot of money and they're really in high demand. And then it was like, okay, well, here we
Yes.
go.
I can remember the time when IT and network security, I mean, maybe that's still true. Like it is a very popular job with a
Yes.
lot of demand, but those things can change pretty rapidly when you're not paying attention and can be caught off guard. All right. So we already know, because that was the hook at the front. We know that you left the job. But before we talk about leaving the job, I want to back up and just kind of paint the scenario. Was there anything that you did like about this study path, this career, the daily grind of the job? Were there things that you did enjoy and did like about it?
I think the biggest thing that I liked was a steady paycheck.
Okay.
I liked that very much. I can't say there was a lot that I loved about the job. I had some great coworkers, but I also had
Okay.
some not great coworkers. So there was a balance there, but really not a lot that I loved. I did work for a great company that treated their employees very well at the end. It took a while to get there. There was one that was really rough before that, that probably even put a really bad taste in my mouth around the whole situation. but not a lot that I loved. I'm not going to lie.
Right. And that's it. I mean, working for a paycheck, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. We
Right? There's
got to
nothing
eat.
wrong with that. Yes,
Yeah.
and there are probably a lot of people who do something that they're okay with, but
Yes.
that I mean, there are definitely people who are advisors and put themselves in and put the expert hat on, and they even say they're like, don't feel like you need to chase your passion. It's okay to do something that you're good at and that pays well, and then your passion might be crappy. I'm not saying that that's the way to go. I just want
Right.
to say, if there's anybody out there that's like, hey, I work for a paycheck, that's fine.
Oh,
That's
absolutely.
completely legal.
If I was okay with it,
Yeah.
then it would have been a different story.
Right. And community at work, coworkers, that's important. For sure. It's not the only thing. Absolutely. And working for a good company. So those are good things. What about studying it? When you were studying and learning to do it, did you like what you were learning and what you were practicing? Or even then, were you like, eh, whatever?
Yeah, I was just, eh, whatever.
And was there any kind of niggle while you were doing that? It was like, I don't maybe love this.
I think there was, but I had already taken a while. I wasn't real focused, so I was, sometimes not taking as many classes as I should. So I got to the point where I was like, we've got to go. We can't change our minds anymore.
Like, I've got to take control of this situation.
Yes.
I'm in charge. I'm getting this degree. All right, so
Yeah.
finishing that. All right, so the give you a lifestyle through the paycheck that you appreciated. And so
Yes.
that's definitely worth it. Okay, so you say that this job was draining the life out of you, and I would love for you to say more about that. Like, what was going on? How were you feeling? How did that show up in your day-to-day life?
Yeah, so we have already established that I didn't like it. So when I was on calls with clients all day, mostly every day, I felt like I could not be authentic because my clients can't know that I don't like what I'm doing, that I really don't care whether their network is up or not. So I just felt like I had to fake it all day, every day, and that felt gross to me. Now I realize that authenticity is one of my most important values. So it makes a lot of sense. But at the time, I just every day at the end of the day would think to myself, I've got to figure out what I want to do because this isn't it. And I also learned that a job in a where a lot of emergencies happen was not really a great place for my nervous system. I was very anxious all of the time. Sunday afternoon would roll around and I would kind of feel sick to my stomach thinking about, oh, I have to go back to work tomorrow. My husband had a plethora of time off. And since I had switched companies a couple years before, I had very, very little compared to him. And we like to travel and adventure together. So that was another thing that was really hard for me. But it really just drained me. And I felt it when I was with my kids. I felt a lot snappier with them. I just wasn't showing up how I wanted to show up. It didn't feel good.
So yeah, that sounds like there's a lot going on there. So you have the Sunday scaries, which is what we call it when the reality of going into the office is makes you not feel good. Some people lose sleep. It's a pretty common sign of dissatisfaction with something going on in your work.
Absolutely.
The Sunday scaries. And also it sounds like you were aware that, I mean, I think it's very interesting that you were like, I just actually don't care about these people and their network.
Yeah, which is not a good thing. I want to do something where I care. I couldn't make myself do it. And I would have conversations with my husband all of the time and I would say, it doesn't make sitting on those meetings all day doesn't make you want to stab yourself in the eye with a pencil. And he would look at me like, no. I was like, okay, well, then I've got a problem. Something's not right because it literally feels like pain when I just can't, I cannot do this. And I so often wished that I could. I felt like it would be so much easier if I did like what I was doing, if it was a good fit for me, because like I said, it was a safe job. I made great money. It was something that I could have continued doing through retirement, but it was not good for my quality of life. It was not good for my kids' quality of life. It was just not
Yeah. So there's
it.
probably people listening who wonder why you couldn't just compartmentalize it and move through it. Not me. I'm not wondering that, but I think it's worth Throwing that out there because it's not like you are you don't present as if you are like a mean person. You've actually gone on to go into another business that works with clients and involves empathy and things.
Absolutely.
What do you think the difference was? Because you mentioned before that you understood and it's very important these outages for people, and that was highly critical. Do you have any sense of why there was that disconnect where you're like, no, I don't, this is not important to me?
I really don't know. I think there was just so many different layers of things that I was dissatisfied with that I just couldn't get there. And I spent so many hours wishing and trying to compartmentalize, and I couldn't, for
And
whatever reason.
so it bled over into your interactions with your family and your happiness outside of work. All
Yeah,
right,
and really my
so.
overall well-being. I wasn't sleeping well. I mean, I was never a great sleeper until, maybe 5 years ago, but I would dream about work. I would all of the, it was just, I felt like I couldn't get away from it.
What are some of the other, like, before you took this job, like when you were a kid, did you have like, what are some of the other like starter jobs that you had?
I worked at Dairy Queen was my first job.
Okay.
And then I also
What a
worked at a
great job, also, by the way, to work in a place where you can make your own peanut butter parfait
Absolutely.
and yes, instant access to the little dip cone. Okay, fantastic
Anytime
job.
that I'm anywhere that has a self-serve ice cream machine, I still make it the same way Dairy Queen does with the little loop on top.
I love that so much. We did Dairy Queen. Probably not everybody has Dairy Queen in their family, but we are tried and true Dairy Queen family. In my house, it's like if it's like every once in a while, we're like, we'll go. We have a drive-through Dairy Queen nearby us, and they even have a happy hour. So, which is like so funny. You can go and get like I'm going to mess up all of the prices and things like that, but you can get like a cone for like 79 cents if you come like before between like 2 and 4 or whatever. It's
I'm there.
like it's really, really great. So, all right. So I totally hijacked that conversation. But that is a service job, right? So client-based and service job. But okay. So what other jobs did you have?
I also worked at a pizza place, so another very similar, and then in a call center. And that was really it before I got into IT. I did take a IT break half-ish way through and worked for a real estate team for a
Okay.
while. None of the, well, I would say that I liked the jobs, actually the fast food type jobs more than I did the others. And I think it's because of the not sitting still behind a desk all day vibe. Those,
Okay, all right.
that's a struggle for me.
Okay, so that's a struggle. So the call center would have been a struggle, but
Yes.
working face to face and talking to people in food service, which is also very high demand. And can be very, it's very forward facing. I'm one of those people that I think that everybody should spend some time working in a restaurant with people because you very quickly get very thick skin. One of the jobs I had as a kid in food service, I didn't actually do this. I just had to deal with the consequence, but they were moving a chair through like a group of people and clocked somebody over the head with like just sort of tagged the top of somebody's head with the
Oh no.
bottom. It was horrible. It's horrible, but if you when you live through those things, it's very quickly you're like, all right, life goes on even with dumb
It
things,
does.
exactly. So, all right, so it's a very specific sort of scenario where you're like, wow, this is not bringing me life. This is not bringing me joy. All right, so I do talk to you. I'm lucky enough I get to talk to all kinds of people about career changes in different ways. They happen in a million different ways. Sometimes companies will close, they'll be downsizing. Sometimes people storm in and quit in a blaze of emotion. If you're comfortable sharing this part of the story with us, was this your choice of a departure? And like, tell us a little bit about how you left.
Yes, it was my choice. I was starting to study to become, or I was certified as a health and wellness coach, and I was studying for my board exam to be a national board certified health and wellness coach, and juggling the two. And as I was doing that, I realized, how am I supposed to help people be well when I'm not well? Realistically, I can't have a full-time job plus do this certification plus work with coaching new clients and try to build a business while also spending enough time with my kids and giving my family the attention that they deserved and it took me a while. My husband kind of kept mentioning, whenever you want to leave, we're ready. But I felt a lot of shame and guilt over the fact that I couldn't, not couldn't, but that the corporate, box that I felt like I should be in wasn't working for me.
Okay.
And so after a couple months of doing both, I went down to part-time, and then probably a couple months later was realized it's just time.
Okay. So you structured it and you
Yes.
phased yourself out. You went from full-time to part-time to not working for them. So let's pick on that little scab about like what your mindset was here about holding on to the job. So you highlighted that it sounds like to me you were saying, and you can let me know if I'm on the right track or not, that you had a sense that you were expected to stay in a job where you're an employee working for somebody else.
Yes, very much.
So,
That
and
was
would you
probably the
say,
hardest part for me for a while.
okay. And so that there's a lot of things with that. Do you have any, is there anybody in your family that you know who is like an entrepreneur or a freelancer? Did you have any exposure to that growing up?
No.
So you didn't have anybody modeling working for themselves. And so that leads to the idea that you go out and you get a job or for somebody else. It's a pretty common mindset struggle for people who are starting their own things. If they have an employee mindset, converting to I don't have to be an employee mindset. Yeah, that can be a big thing. What else was going on in your mind when you were thinking about making this change? What were your hopes and what were your fears?
My hopes were that I could grow a sustainable coaching business. My fears were, who is going to pay me to coach them? Are there people that are going to trust me to do this? Am I going to be able to find enough? How do I do it? There was a lot of fear.
A
And
lot of fear.
a lot of fear. And at first, I think I even was afraid to hope for much because I didn't want to get my hopes up and then not be successful.
Do you know people who have started freelance gigs or side gigs and side hustles who have experienced failure? And did you have an actual example of somebody having that happen to them, or was it just a fear, just out of just the unknown?
Just the unknown.
Yeah.
Now I have s seen that, but at the time, no, I didn't really know anybody who had gone out on their own at all. But
So
now
this
the
was all new. This was all new. All right. So if it was all new and you didn't have any examples, where did the thought come from? Like, this is where I should go. What I should do is do my own thing. Where did that come from if there was no example?
So at first, I was getting the certifications with the intent to work for a company.
Okay.
And then as I started looking for jobs, I realized that I wouldn't be able to help people in the way that I wanted to help them working for somebody else. A lot of them have like specific structures where you can coach on these specific things in this specific way. And I didn't like that idea. I wanted to be able to help people in the way that I wanted to. And when I was getting my board certification, it required coaching hours. So I established a business so that I could at least get paid while I was getting my coaching hours, and then just kind of went from there. I gave myself a little test window. I'll try it on my own for 6 months and then see what happens. And here we are, almost 3.5 years later.
Okay, so that was one of the questions I was going to ask was about the timeline. So you've been doing this for 3.5 years. All right, so what was the like? Let's talk about health and wellness in you as a person, like not the job, not anything, but before, like as a kid and when you were in college, just in your life as a wife, a mom, a woman, a human being. What is your own personal relationship and attraction to concepts of health and wellness? Because it's like not built into IT.
No. As a kid, I was pretty healthy, very active, always had a well-balanced diet. I mean, as you know, with the exception of chicken nuggets every now and then, whenever I could talk my mom into it. As a young adult, I fell off of that and kind of had a chunk where I wasn't moving my body, wasn't eating well. And then when my daughter was born, she's 13, I had a kind of light bulb moment of I don't want her to grow up with this version of me. I want to go back to that version of me who was moving my body all the time and felt good in my skin and all of that. And that stemmed the beginning of my health and wellness journey. And now I think of wellness very differently. At the beginning, I thought of it only as the way we feed ourselves and the way we exercise. And now I know that there's so much more than that. And I really incorporate that in my business of how can we truly take care of ourselves? Those areas are, of course, very important, but there's so much more. The way we sleep, are we checking in with ourselves? What are some small, easy ways that we can take care of ourselves throughout our workday? Just so much more than those big pieces that we see and hear about all the time. But there's all of these little things that are so important as well.
Yeah, no, that's a really, so there's a couple of things that you brought up that I'll touch on. One is, I think it's really interesting. There's a saying in the coaching, mentorship, self-help world, which is like, a lot of us are our own first client. Like we start with our personal experience, right? That's what drives us into at least, the training. And then maybe we go on and make it a business. Sounds like that's true for you, that this was, you were drawn to it because you were curious about it for yourself. And going from there. Then the other thing is that it's really interesting when it comes to, and I'll use the word health and not wellness in, when I talk about this. Health often gets mixed up with size and weight, specifically for women. And that's a really nuanced and varied conversation. But one of the things that I think probably does hold some weight is that people tend to sometimes start the process of transformation with what they're unhappy about, something they know they don't like. And so, as a starting point, it's not necessarily the worst place to start when you're like, I'm unhappy with how my body feels in my clothes. I'm unhappy with how my body feels in how I'm moving through the day. And often, the only framework we have for that is the scale.
Yes, that's a tricky one.
It is.
I don't love the obsession with the scale. I don't love that everything that we see on social media is all about the scale, all about your protein. Of course, these things are so important, but we can also wreck our overall well-being by being hyper-focused on these specific things, which we can't always control. And the scale does not tell the whole story.
Even my multifunction scale that wants to tell me all the data points, it probably doesn't have all the details. Yeah, no, it's, so I'm 51, and when you turn 50, social media figures out that you're 50, and it tells you like every third piece of information is like you should be eating 100 grams of protein a day and drinking a gallon of water. And I'm like, hey, did I become a fitness model when I like not fitness model in terms of like fashion model, but like physique? Like I was like, did I step into that world when I wasn't paying attention? It's like I'm not sure that every 50-year-old needs to be eating 100 grams of protein. Maybe, I don't know. Like I'm just like, wow, that is a really, really specific data point.
Yeah, and it's
And just
tricky
the
because, oh, sorry.
yeah, no, go on, go on.
Oh, I was just gonna say it's tricky because, I've through this journey had a lot of different things that I've tried and experimented with and, done the macro counting and all of these things. And when I was in the smallest version of me was definitely not when I was the happiest or the most well. I was, going to a birthday party and then feeling guilty that I ate a piece of pizza and shared a cupcake with my kid. I was thinking about what I could eat tomorrow so that I didn't ruin things over the week. There was a constant thought process of that. And then, when weight fluctuated, which it does, especially for women, there I would be upset with myself or mad with myself. And now I, eat to nourish myself, eat to in a way that feels good without overly restricting. And, I've gained a little bit of weight in that process, but I feel overall so much more well. So that's a hard one for me, is that
It
obsession
is, yeah.
with the scale, because it's not magically going to make you happy.
It may not magically make you happy, and which is not to say that people shouldn't push for a physique that they find beautiful or that they enjoy, because that's and but at the same time, the other thing that you hit on there that is a known known, but we tend to ignore it, is that thin is not the same as healthy. And or small, let's say small is not the same as healthy. It can be other things, and correspondingly, there's some there's size. Size is not the the end indicator for a lot of things, which is simultaneously true with sometimes size is an indicator of things that are not good. right? Like, so they go together. It's not an absolute data point. So, all right. So, 3.5 years ago, you start making this change. You start by pursuing a training certification and learning all about the things. You're on your own journey. You start working with clients. What did people in your life, going back to when you were working in IT and you're beginning to think about, I'm going to get training for health and wellness? What did people in your life think about this decision? Like, when did you tell them, and when you told them, how did they react?
I told them as I started my first certification, which was just like a little baby certification. And I think they all looked at me a little bit like I was crazy, even though they knew that health and wellness was something that was very important to me. And then when I decided to leave my corporate job, I think there was a lot of shock. Nobody really said anything up front to me about it, but I would not be surprised if between them and their spouses, if there was a lot of, oh my gosh, what is she doing? Well, or maybe even some bets about how long it took me to go back to my corporate job.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So did you feel pressure from, did you feel pressure to make it work and not go back?
Yes, but I don't know that it was more internal pressure. Because I knew what it felt like to go back or to be there, and I didn't want to go back to that.
Yeah. Once many, many years ago, when I was in my 20s, I was working in an office and we were going through a the company was going through a stressful time, and we were just like living through it, as one does when you're an employee. And I remember one of my coworkers came into work and he's like, I had a dream that I had to go back to the retail job I had before I got there. And it's just, when you have a job, retail's tough. Retail's tough, especially in the holidays and things like that. And there are people who love retail and it's a great job, but it can be tough. And I still remember this person was like, I had a dream that this fell apart and I had to go back to where, this is how long ago this was. It was a video store. I had to go back to retail and a video rental store. So anyway, all right. So you shared with us that you phased out of the job that you had very slowly. But talk to us about how you felt emotionally. Were you all in on the idea of health and wellness coaching? Like, when did that happen? When did you become more and more confident and aware that this was something that meant enough to you that you wanted to make this full time?
Once I started consistently working with clients and I, felt their change, felt how excited they were when things were working, really saw that and felt the energy from those interactions, that's when I was all in. That is very rewarding to me.
So now that is really interesting. So you did not feel that that's like a closing of a loop. That's like you're co-creating something with the journey and then you're experiencing it with the client on the other side. You did not get that feeling or experience with the IT clients that you were at work with.
No, I wish I did, but no.
But you might have when you were working in a restaurant, because like you serve the meal, you're there, you see them enjoy it or hate it or whatever, but it closes. That's an interesting thing. Just a food for thought that that might have been one of the things that was driving you bazonkers. So, all right. So, and then what this was this a linear path? Was it off to the races the minute you started everything? Clients were knocking at the door, success, success, success. Or were there challenges and reservations as you leaned more into working into yourself?
I started off pretty strong, but my first year was still nerve-wracking for me because I didn't know the seasons, how, what there naturally are months that are slower for this sort of thing. So the first year, it was kind of like, oh my gosh, I had clients and now I'm slow. Are they ever going to come back? Is this going to work? Now that I've seen 3 full years, I naturally know, hey, December's gonna be slow. Let's take some courses during that. Let's use that time to plan ahead on my email newsletter, whatever that looks like. But at first, that was scary for me, seeing that it wasn't a consistent thing. And I mean, still, that's something that's tricky for me is I'll see 1 month is high and then the next month is a little bit lower. But I, have to go back and remind myself this is just part of the process. I can look at this for all of the years and it just happens.
Okay. So then I think that's really interesting because you described the job that you left as being very safe. And then this is giving the first year that you were in business for yourself, it felt there were moments where it maybe didn't feel safe. Tell us a little bit more. You told us that one of the things you did was you reminded yourself that This was part of the process, but how did you move through the fear?
Not as gracefully as I would have hoped at first. It has gotten better this last December. I was okay, even though I mean, I knew at that point, but I was nervous. I think I had a lot of second thoughts, wondered if it was just, beginning opening business that people were excited about, but that was going to be it for me. But just knowing that it was something that I enjoyed doing, I don't get the Sunday scaries anymore. That means a lot to me. I also have control over my schedule now, which is something that's very important. I can be at my kids' field trips. I can, pick them up from
Right.
school if I want to. All of those things are worth so much to me, and the work is so fulfilling. So it was, I think, just the enjoyment and how much I really like this and the quality of life changes for me that really kept me on the same track.
All right, that's a beautiful answer. I really appreciate it. Okay, so today you are a health and wellness coach, as we
I
have
am.
said, right? You struck out. You went into business for yourself. Yay. All right, so so talk to us about like what we're gonna in a minute, we're gonna do the final questions. And so
Okay.
tell us specifically what you do, how you help people specifically, and how you want people to reach out to you after the episode, how they can find you and connect with you.
All right. So I help professional women who are feeling overwhelmed, burnt out, tired of doing all of the things to slow down and find sustainable ways that they can take care of themselves every single day.
All right. Very good. And so you have a special offer that you've made available for our audience, which is really great. And I want to thank you for this. You call this the stress reset, finding balance and self-care. Oh, you know what? I ask everybody about self-care, but I didn't notice until right now. I just, as I'm reading this, that you actually talk about self-care. That's great.
Yes.
Okay. So that was a good question for you. So you are offering 25% off of a session. And if you want to do that, there is a link in the show notes, and that goes anywhere you're listening to the podcast. It's on YouTube. The easiest way for the audience to get to the link is to be subscribed to the Imperfect Adulting email list, because then I send it direct to your email box and you just click on it. So if you are like so many people, you're reading, listening to this podcast in the car, on the train, on the treadmill, no worries. Subscribe. We send it to you. Easy peasy. Thank you very much, Amanda, for that very generous offer. Tell us what, so your website is simply wellnesscoach.com.
Yep. And the best way to find me is through my website and signing up for my newsletter. It's
Okay.
once a week, short but actionable, nice little kind of like a little love letter. Some take some time for yourself, and that's the best way.
Love note from Amanda in your email box.
I'm
All right, very good. All right. Amanda, are you ready for the final three questions?
ready.
All right, don't be nervous. Just kidding. Now, I don't know if anybody's nervous about these, but in the beginning, before we had a bunch of them as examples, maybe people were, but I don't think anybody is anymore. Okay, so here we go. Are you a risk taker? And what I mean is, if there was a scale where one is very, very little risk and 10 is show me the way to base jumping, where would you rank yourself?
Three and a half. Not a big
Okay.
risk taker, which is probably one of the reasons leaving my corporate job was so hard.
That may it tracks. The dots are lining up.
They are.
All right. So now, do you cook? And if so, do you have a favorite kitchen gadget?
Ooh, I only cook when my husband's out of town,
Okay.
which is this weekend.
All right.
I don't think I have a favorite kitchen gadget. Do it. I could make one up. KitchenAid
Your
mixer.
kitchen. Oh, that's a good one.
This is not actually cooking, but we throw some vanilla ice cream and some double stuffed Oreos in there and make like a at home McFlurry. That's what made me say the KitchenAid mixer.
And you do that in the KitchenAid mixer. I would do that. I would totally do that in a blender.
We do it in the KitchenAid mixer with the paddle attachment.
Yeah. And that's the, well, maybe that would work better.
It's delicious. My daughter has a gluten allergy, so she can't get them out anywhere. So we
Right.
decided to try it at home one day. It's delicious.
That's, I did an interview recently about food allergies because we have a food allergy in the house. And
Oh.
as soon as you have one, there are, you begin, you're like, well, we're going to make this at
Yep.
home so that you can try it and we don't have to worry about it, because
Yeah.
worrying about the food allergy in a restaurant is very stressful.
Ugh, exhausting, especially when it's a
Yeah.
kid and you want them to have all the fun things that everybody else wants to have. It's got to make it happen.
Yeah, it's exhausting. The exhausting is the right word for it, because it's omnipresent in your mind when you're like, so exactly. So if I got into your car today, if you and I got into the car today to go like on an errand, what would your stereo be set to? Is it on the radio, satellite radio, phone with audiobook, kid music? What's happening in your car when we get in?
It would be a podcast.
A podcast.
Yep. And they range from things like this all to murder. There's really, actually, I shouldn't say they range from that. There's really no in between. It's either something like growth, personal development, or murder. And there's not really in between. I'm working on it. I'm working on that because I
True
feel like,
crime
yep.
and self-help. You know, I think those, okay, so I think if you look at the categories of popular podcasts, like, and talk radio, like sports is the actual like first category that wins in
Yes.
talk radio. But then I think that true crime and self-development are the next two. So like, it's not that that's the craziest thing, but when you put them side by side, serial murder and, you know, be a better person, that's hilarious.
Yep,
That
I
is
get
a
enough. I'm like, okay, I've had enough of trying to grow myself today. We got to go listen to some serial killer stories.
I love that. That's a wonderful answer. That's it, Amanda Beers. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.